Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're exploring the balancing act between stabilising growth and accumulating debt that faces China. We'll consider whether the country's advocacy for globalisation is at odds with its capital controls. And we'll ask how China is to cope with an overheating property market, that accumulation of debt, wobbles in the interbank market and capital flight. We start with this question of the balancing act between stabilising growth and accumulating debt. UBS China economist Yifan Hu.
For the coming years, because China still will have quite a large pressure, the downward pressure, especially amid the transition, economic transition. So I think investment will continue to be important driver for the economic growth. So we expect therefore the debt will continue to grow for the coming years amid the economic downward, economic deceleration. So I think it's a bit more accurate. It should be a balance between the stabilizing growth and structural reforms. I think that for the debt itself, but China government already realized the issue. So I think that they will try to not let the debt to over the bursting, but at the same time, we expect the debt will continue to grow. Hopefully, it grow in a very mild way. And also at the same time, I think the in terms of debt structure, we also notice that for the corporate debt has increased much faster than other parts, such as the government and household. So that's also some efforts the government will mainly focus for the coming years.
We asked Thomas Deng, UBS Regional CIO for Greater China and Chief China Strategist in Hong Kong, whether China's advocacy for globalization is at odds with the country's capital controls.
That, I think, is not necessarily contradictory. China still wants free trade, and I think the capital money flow with current account, which means the trade and services, are still normal. It's just, you know, for capital account investment, need more scrutiny.
And we asked Angus Grigg, China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review based in Shanghai too, if there's an almost inevitable tension here.
Absolutely. I think China has, in recent times, while it's been out there playing the sort of the good citizen of globalisation, actually within China the policies remain very restrictive. So there is a very big conflict between what China has been saying publicly in the last few weeks and actually the policies on the ground here in China. Most particularly that is the fact that the capital gate here in China is still tightly enforced. In fact, they're making it harder for people to take money out of the country and also to bring it in. So yeah, there's definitely a tension there.
Isabel Hilton, CEO of China Dialogue, had this to say about this tension between capital controls and globalisation.
Well, there are tensions. There are a lot of tensions in China's position. China's trying to make a very big transition from a very heavily investment-led, export-led economy to one that has more consumption, less investment, but one that is also engaged in the world. So it is trying both to stop capital flight from China, but also to invest abroad. It's trying to support its exports, which are still 40% of its economy, but at the same time develop an internal market. So there are lots of pushes and pulls going on in the Chinese economy. It's perfectly true, though, if you look at what Xi Jinping said at Davos, that the Chinese are quite nervous about a Trump administration disrupting global trade, because really getting through this rather challenging period does depend on no major shocks for the Chinese, and that would be a major shock.
Now, it certainly feels as though China has been rather overshadowed by events in the US and looming elections in Europe of late. Does Thomas Deng go along with that?
I think US Trump's potential policy, particularly his trade policy with regard to China, definitely has caught a lot of attention. But it seems to me that concern has eased quite a bit after phone communication between President Xi and Donald Trump. Well, by Trump said that they will continue to follow the One China policy and to offer to build a constructive relationship. So I think the market has eased, concern has eased quite a bit.
So has China been rather overshadowed by events elsewhere? Is that the view in Shanghai, for example? Well, there's been a definite shift from 2016 into 2017, but the same problems are there in China, explains Angus Grigg.
For most of 2016, the big focus was on China and China's economy. Now, probably with what's happening in Europe and also what we've seen in the US with the election of Donald Trump, those sort of domestic issues in China, which are very relevant to the rest of the world, have been overshadowed. But I guess the point I'd make is that the same old problems still exist here in China. Same old problems about how to keep growth high, how to bring debt under control, how to try and cool down a sort of overheating housing market, and generally how to sort of retool the economy and get it ready for the sort of next phase of growth, which is more around sort of high-tech manufacturing and services rather than making sort of cheap t-shirts and cigarette lighters.
Events in the US and here in Europe have overshadowed China's economic status, which dominated the agenda more in 2016. Does Isabel Hilton agree?
Well, I think we still need to be looking at the Chinese economy. And if you look at the financial press and the more specialised press, there's still a lot of concern. And essentially the concern is there is going to be some kind of triage in China. Something is going to happen because debt levels are now, you know, nudging 300%, because it is fairly clear that the so-called third plenum reforms, which are the ones that were meant to, you know, reduce the inefficiencies in the economy and cut back on kind of all these subsidies to zombie enterprises, those haven't really happened. So as the debt keeps climbing, and this, after all, is at a time when the Chinese government has declared that it wishes to cut back on investment, but it's still setting targets for growth. And in order to meet those targets, local governments are still borrowing, but they're borrowing and packaging financial instruments, you know, in a way that was going on in the States before the subprime crisis. So there are a lot of reasons to be nervous. It's not sustainable. And really, the only debate that I can detect amongst economists and experts is when it's going to happen. Can they kick it down the road till, you know, 2020, or will it be 2018? But something major is going to happen.
Isabel Hilton. Still to come on The Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at how China is set to cope with an overheating property market, this accumulation of debt, wobbles in the interbank market, and capital flight. How is China going to cope with an overheating property market? That debt accumulation we've already heard about, and the still thorny issue of capital flight. Again, it's a question of striking difficult balances, suggests Thomas Deng.
What we are seeing now, the government is shifting the priority to contain financial risk as the major priority this year. So what we see now, central bank PBOC nudged up the interbank interest rate by 10 basis points in a single and gesture to contain the rising leverage. So that's what they are trying to, and also put to potentially guard against the property bubble.
To make sense of the short to medium term, then look to a big recent shift in Chinese monetary policy, as Angus Grigg explains.
Very interestingly, in the last week, we've seen what could potentially be a very significant shift here in Chinese monetary policy. So we basically had 6 years of monetary policy easing. And now, a week ago, the Chinese central bank put a stop to that and they raised the 7-day repurchase rate, which is like the benchmark interest rate here in China. Now, they didn't raise it by very much, but it signaled that the direction of interest rates had changed and that from now on, we will see tighter rather than looser monetary policy. Now, in places like Europe and America, that wouldn't necessarily have such a big impact. 10 basis points, a small rate movement like that wouldn't have such a big impact. But given the amount of credit that has been pumped into the economy here and the signal that they are going to start slowing the growth of credit, then I think we will see, potentially could see, a fairly sharp slowdown in growth. So officially the numbers are around 6.5% now. Most economists believe that that's a pretty fair representation of where the economy is. But you could see over the course of this year, growth going down to sort of 5.5%. Now, that might not be represented in the official figures, but in sort of real terms in how these alternative indexes which economists use, many are saying now we could see growth of 5 to 5.5% and slowing further as they drain credit from the economy. And so it's all about credit here in China. Growth and credit are so tightly linked that, you know, the really big thing to watch is what they do on credit. And the next couple of months will be very key to that. And they've already sort of, I guess, indicated that the bias is towards tightening.
Does Yifan Hu agree that we saw a recent shift in Chinese monetary policy to address some of these core challenges?
We continue to expect China's economy will continue to decelerate. So currently, I think that the government tried to actually let the economy to decelerate orderly. That means in a reasonable pace, but at the same time, and also continue to push the reforms. So I think that currently for the government, I think there's a several strategies. And first, for the property market, I think there is a potential bubble risk. So it's already well alerted. So I think this year the government will continue to control the property market, especially control the credits on the property market and try to cool it down. For the accumulated debt, so as we said, it's inevitable that China will continue to have to increase the rate of the debt as a GDP ratio, but at the same time, and hopefully it can increase much slower than the GDP growth. So that could be the long-term solvency. And also for the interbank market rate. So in our view, probably the major reason for the government to control the interbank market rate is try to deleverage in the interbank market. But at the same time, they will continue to support the credit growth. So I think that, yes, this year, I think the government tried to maneuver in a delicate balance between all these kind of challenges, and especially to try to finally to stabilize the economy in an orderly deceleration pace.
Next, our panel considers whether instability in China could become a problem for global markets. Here's Thomas Deng.
Definitely will have some impact to global market, as we've seen last year when China's currency depreciated more than what the market expected. Market were worried about whether China is having hard lending. So apparently the financial market responded quite negatively. Global market collapsed. And if China slowed down, the commodity market will also get hit hard, given China is the largest consumer. So I think the simple answer is, if there is, you know, instability in China economy, that will have impact on global market, global asset prices.
Could instability in China become a global problem? There's little doubt in Angus Grigg's mind.
China, the world economy and people, foreign governments and everything like that, any little ructions in China become huge impact around the world. And we saw that a year ago when there was sort of minor movements in the currency and global share markets suddenly were in play and people were afraid of risk and, you know, there was a flight to US dollars and things like that. So absolutely, if we see any ructions in China over the next few months, it will have a very, very big impact. But having said that, I think the economy is pretty stable here. The government, by signalling that credit is tightening, are giving us this, I guess, an indication that they believe that growth is fairly stable, although it will slow, but also that they've sort of got the economic levers under control. So I think the chances of a big shock in China in the next little while are probably fairly minor.
Finally on the programme, a last word from Isabel Hilton. Once again, we've discussed explicitly and implicitly the need for structural reform. It's a necessity, but where are the drivers for change coming from? From Beijing? From external sources? How likely is it that we'll see progress in this space, in Isabel's view?
Well, there's a rhetorical commitment to it. And if you're going to make that transition from cheap labour, high volume manufacturing, which the Chinese, you know, have done very successfully, but that's run out of rope. So if you're going to become a much, you know, leaner, greener and higher value economy, you have to make those reforms. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. You have to divert your investment in the right places. You have to close down. You have to stop subsidising the wrong things. You know, you still have an enormous surplus in things like coal, cement, steel, all those things which were, you know, part of the first phase when China was building out its infrastructure. It's done that. It has to stop, you know, subsidizing these sectors and really concentrate on higher value stuff. So the Chinese know that, but it's just very hard to do. And I think they have not really summoned the political consensus across China through the party. I'm not sure it's going to happen this year, because this year is a political year in China. We've got a big party congress in October. Xi Jinping will be negotiating furiously, trying to get his men into the key positions in the Politburo. And so we're not likely to see a lot of decisive action, I think, until after that's all sewn up. I think all the energy is going to go into that.
And that's Isabel Hilton bringing us to the end of this 124th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com, or catch up via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.